Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We are stood inside an emptying Old Trafford. There's a few ground staff on the pitch just sorting it out. There's people picking up litter, some broadcasters packing away their equipment, and Andy Mitten and Laurie Whitwell are stood alongside me. We're going to react to that 0-0 draw for Manchester United against Newcastle, a frustrating watch. We'll also talk about the match coming up this week against Tottenham. But Andy, a frustrating 90 minutes that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was good. That's Richard Arnold, the leading executive of Manchester United, just walking down the main stand steps. And I'm not answering the question that you've just asked me. But
You're waiting to get out, Richard Arnold to get out of earshot, I think, first.
Well, I'm not going to change anything that I say. I feel a little bit flat, a little bit deflated after that. I think if Manchester United don't win home matches, especially when you think that United have beaten Liverpool here, beaten Arsenal here, and I know that Newcastle are much improved. I thought their defence was excellent. But my overriding feeling at the moment is deflated. I think that was a feeling inside Old Trafford as well. It felt a little bit flat. And the team has got to take the chances. When Marcus didn't put that header in at the end, I just thought, oh no, it's just one of them. First draw of the season, that's the first
draw. Someone was saying after the podcast the other day that United don't draw games. I can't remember who that was, Andy.
Yeah, me. I don't attract Miss Worlds either. So hopefully, if we're thinking of like reverse psychology, we might have some good news on the next podcast.
Yeah, I don't know how I can follow that really. If you Miss Worlds out there, write into us.
Right.
Send pictures. I think Andy is right in that if the Rashford chance goes in at the end there, it's a totally different story, isn't it? It's a last minute winner, injury time. It's kind of that. I mean, the atmosphere felt like it was ready. It would have exploded at that point, albeit, as Andy said, I think generally the mood was kind of, it was lacking any buoyancy around Old Trafford. So it didn't feel like there was a growing anticipation. I think people had started to leave, before the end.
It didn't feel like they were building up to a goal, did it really?
No, they had good pressure, second half, certainly. And Ten Hag said that he felt that they dominated the end of the game, which I think is probably fair. I mean, Newcastle were defending deep, weren't they? Rashford squares the ball for Fred for that chance. Could he have shot? I don't know.
Rashford was offside, you know, as well. When the replay showed, I think he looked a yard or two offside.
No, but who are you? So I think he looked offside for the two defenders, but then Trippier at the far side. I thought he might have been playing him on.
Ooh, interesting.
I've thrown a curveball in there, haven't I? I mean, listen, we didn't get the VAR lines up, did we? So we'll never know for sure. And if the goal goes in, you know, I guess it would have been chalked off if it was even a toenail offside. But nonetheless, I think at least Rashford introduced to the game did give United an extra
made a difference.
Yeah, it gave a threat in behind, that sort of pace and kind of determination that he's brought in his game this season. But yeah, he obviously has to score that header, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He was left out of the starting lineup because he was a little bit ill. Marcus Rashford, he's obviously been hanging out wherever I have because I've got a bit of the lurgy at the moment. Andy and Laurie are just taking a step further back at this point.
Yeah, you've only just told us this now.
Oh yeah, he should have scored, definitely. I mean, there's quite a bit to reflect on still, isn't there, despite the draw. It was a different attack for United today with Cristiano Ronaldo starting his first Premier League game since Brentford, only his second start of the season. Wasn't best pleased when he was taken off either, was he?
He's a forward and he didn't score. So I think it's that simple. I think he was just on the right side of not showing his frustration too much. I saw Erik ten Hag go to him and he didn't blank him. That would have been a talking point, for example.
He also made sure that he clapped him all the way off the pitch. You know,
he took his time, by the way, didn't he?
Well, I think he was sort of, you know, begrudgingly coming off, wasn't he? Because clearly he felt like he was perhaps going to get a penalty or score or do something. Although, I don't know, I'll let Andy finish his answer in a second. But he was offside a couple of times when you thought he didn't need to be, and it didn't feel fluid, did it, in attack?
He doesn't look quite at it, does he, Ronaldo?
I thought he came back too deep too often, because he's desperate to score, he's desperate to make an impact, and I like that about him. But we're talking after a 0-0, and it's not just Cristiano today. I think Manchester United only managed 2 shots on target in 90 minutes. It's just not good enough, is it? I think 63% of possession. Newcastle also had 2 shots. Manchester United were better in the second half. Newcastle had much better chances in the first half. And I know we're going to focus on Manchester United because that's what this podcast is about. But I thought their 2 central defenders, especially Botman, were fantastic. They just looked really comfortable. Huge, aggressive team. Don't think they play particularly good football. But they're an improving and well-coached team. And given the finances and resources behind them, we're going to see games against Newcastle United, who've got a terrible record here, get much, much tougher.
1 win in 39 visits here for Newcastle before today, and obviously that's 1 in 40 now. The wingers as well, Laurie, it was Jadon Sancho and Antony who were the choice today for Erik ten Hag. You wrote with Mark Carey on The Athletic about Antony this week. First question, why was the article not called One Trick Tony?
We missed a trick there, didn't we? Speaking of tricks, I don't write the headlines. I'll
let you off then.
So I'm throwing my editors under a bus here, but yeah, I got quite a bit of stick for that article.
Did you? Why? Yeah.
Well, I think people, you know, justifiably thought, you know, and maybe I'm wrong, but 3 games, 3 goals, and you're sort of slagging him off. I wasn't meaning to be, you know, overly critical of him. It was kind of an observation that, speaking to people who had watched him, you know, from his way back in Sao Paulo days, that said that his reliance on his left foot is a pronounced feature. Okay, a lot of players have very strong, you know, Lionel Messi has a very strong left foot. Phil Foden, we saw in the stats that we published on the article, his passes, 90% are with his left foot, whereas Antony, I think it's like 80%. So it's, you know, it's not as pronounced in that situation. And, you know, no one has a go at Phil Foden for being one-footed. But I think the point really was that, and we saw it really today, he doesn't.
I'm going to say, do you think the feedback would be different if you'd written the article after today?
Well, I'll see how what you say to this. I nearly tweeted it again and just sort of tried to explain the article.
Dug your heels in deeper.
No, but that's it. You're sort of fishing for insults there, aren't you, in that way? So I thought, no, I'll leave it and maybe leave it a few more weeks. And then if it continues, then maybe I'll post it again. But there was certainly a couple of. I mean, he had Dan Burn on a booking from the first half, and you could tell that was going to be an interesting tussle. And then he beat him twice in the second half, where clearly Burn has kind of let him go because he doesn't want to get sent off. But then he checks back onto his left foot and then crosses it in. And the crosses were bad anyway, you know, so there's that to improve on. But can he not go on the outside and then come back? It does feel like that's his default, and maybe it's because it's a new league and he just wants to kind of trust in what he knows for sure can work. You know, I've watched all his goals for Ajax and Sao Paulo. I've watched all his assists for Ajax, and that, you know, cutting back and left footed cross does produce. You know, Haller's got a couple of glancing headers, but I do feel that the variation would just would put the defenders in a different mindset of how they can perhaps shackle him, because it looked like Matt Target, for example, when he did replace Dan Burn, he just knew that as soon as he comes back, I'm just going to have to block the cross. I know what's coming. So, you know, early days, and he has scored 3 goals, and he was the one with the 2 shots on target in this game. Could have scored in the first half. Good save by Nick Pope, and then it was a sort of weaker shot. Yeah. Again, cutting back onto his left and shooting. He's obviously a threat. He's a very skillful, talented player. And there was a couple of lovely moments where he beat a man with very minimal kind of tell ahead of doing so.
Like the dummy to beat Dan Burn in the first half, I think it was brilliant.
Yeah, so he's clearly a quality player. But, you know, obviously with the price tag, you sort of want a fully rounded player. And so that was kind of where the piece came from. And, yeah, I think those questions are still there after today.
Yeah, and Carl's written a piece as well with Mark Carey too about Jadon Sancho. He seems to like that pairing, Erik ten Hag, Luke Shaw and Jadon Sancho together. It obviously made a bit of a difference off the bench in the week against Ammonia. But, again, you still want more from Jadon, don't you, really?
Well, first on Shaw, I think Shaw's playing well. I think he's looking on it. I think he'd be honest enough to admit that he deserved to lose his place in the team. And Jadon Sancho isn't playing well, and he's lost his place in the team. I think that Erik ten Hag would like him to be a regular in his best starting 11, but you've got to give more than what he's given. And same, we can make comparisons with Antony.
What do you think's missing from Jadon then?
I think that someone with his talent should be running at and beating players more often than he does. The most revealing moment in recent weeks with Jadon Sancho, and I don't know him, I don't know whether this relates to confidence, was when he played the ball back in Cyprus. Manchester United went from an attacking position to him playing the ball back to a single 22-year-old player who fumbled, and that led to a goal. And I couldn't understand why playing against Omonia, because probably a better example over the two legs, if you're not running at Cypriot players or players from a Cypriot team who, with respect, are not the best in the world, that might show something about your confidence. He's had good moments this season. The way he took the goal against Liverpool here at Old Trafford, whoa. But just compare the atmosphere to that night in comparison to what we've had today. So I think he's one of several players who's not firing on. I think United need to be more consistent as a team, and also individuals do as well. Yet at the same time, it's a team still in transition, not at the level of the teams that have like Manchester City. I wanted to say that then without saying the words Manchester City, but
I couldn't.
And we saw that in the derby. So I'm a little bit disappointed because he came with such a fanfare. And there was a good piece in The Athletic this week which talked about how his involvement in the games, in the attacks, is significantly less. And this isn't an improving force, it's a declining one. So I think he needs to do a lot more if he's going to be an attacking player for Manchester, a successful Manchester United team, as opposed to one which finishes sixth again.
Yeah, fans here in the UK may not be able to see the 90 minutes of this game, to be fair, Laurie. Over the course of the match, do you think United missed Christian Eriksen?
Yeah, I think he was probably the pivotal figure today, because if he's in that midfield, replacing Fred, really, who, you know, didn't have a great game, did he? I think what started the game quite frequently was getting into those attacking thirds, but then the pass wasn't weighted correctly. So I think Ronaldo to Sancho one time was heavy pass. Sancho to Ronaldo himself. Fernandes maybe had one that was astray. So I think Eriksen just brings that kind of composure, and the way he can pick passes is it's just a huge benefit to this team. Particularly from deep, really. But you even looked at in the second half. I mean, Martinez, the Rashford chance ultimately started from him picking that pass through the middle to Luke Shaw, which is something you'd hope Eriksen could have done more frequently. I think it was only late in the game that Martinez managed to sort of step up and do that himself when Newcastle dropped deep. So it just sort of shows having someone of that kind of precise passing in the middle could have just opened up Newcastle more, because they were a tough team to break down. They've got a good defence, but you feel that United could have pushed and pulled better than they did.
Laurie, you've also been causing yet more controversy on social media with some arguments over penalties. Before we talk about that, how fascinating was it, Erik ten Hag in that press conference, sidestepping any comment, no matter what any of the journalists in the room tried, to talk about any of the decisions or the officials at all?
Yeah.
First time we've seen him so angry at officials, isn't it?
Yeah, it's anyway. He was deep in conversation with Craig Pawson at the end of the game. He was remonstrating with the fourth official in the first half. So Eddie Howe and his assistant Tyndall were very much pressing their complaints for a penalty when Callum Wilson went down from Rafael Varane, which I think probably was a penalty. Yeah,
I agree.
Potentially a softer one, but you know, still. Ten Hag, I think, saw that and thought, I need to get myself involved here with the fourth official because I can't be letting them have a free run of it. And there was, I think, an issue where Callum Wilson fouled a United player and he thought maybe it should have been a booking. So I think he just used that as a means to get into the fourth official. After the game, yeah, I mean, what, four or five questions about the penalties? Because that seems to be one of the big talking points, certainly amongst United fans on social media that have been watching the game. Ten Hag just wouldn't get drawn. I don't mind that as a manager, because I think, you know, what particular benefit do you have? Clearly, you might want to put a bit of pressure on the officials if you want to go that way. Ten Hag doesn't, I guess, want to step into that and wants us to write our own opinions as sort of journalists and observers. But yeah, I mean, he was more forthcoming about his own team, and this is a slight sea change from what he's been like previously, because he was more positive. He was saying it was a good performance. We pressed them really well. We broke Newcastle, but we didn't kill them. He said they had cramp at the end and they're a very physical team.
The physical point was interesting, actually, wasn't it? So he was insisting that United had done enough in that game to win it in terms of winning the physical battle, yeah, running more, pressing more, making Newcastle sort of struggle towards the end. He said they're one of the fittest teams in the league as well. Interesting that he's thinking about that even.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they made five subs as well, Newcastle. United made one, which I think is a telling, you know, example of what he feels like he's got on the bench. You know, Kobbie Mainoo, 17-year-old midfielder, was on the bench because Tomane was suspended and Eriksen was ill. And I think he's a really promising player, by the way. So that, I think that's a sort of warranted inclusion. But it sort of shows that scratch beneath the surface and this squad, the options aren't really there to really affect a game. So I think he was probably happy in the fact that, you know, he only could make one sub and actually United finished the game much the stronger. But on the penalties, clearly he felt that, I guess, at least one was a penalty. I think he also felt that the Ronaldo goal should have stood. I mean, I don't really see how that can be justified because, you know, he's obviously about to take the kick, the goalkeeper. I know, you know, the defender's touched it. And the one caveat I probably would say on that is that a couple of times when Newcastle had deep free kicks in their own half, Trippier was about to take it and Pope ran up and kind of nudged the ball forward so that Trippier could then run on with it and go long. I don't know if that's a specific tactic against Man United, but so maybe Ronaldo's thinking, well, one of you's already taken it sort of sneakily and therefore I'm going to nip in. But, you know, we've had it here, haven't we, where United have scored a goal from a quick corner where, was it Giggs and Rooney that, you know, sort of...
It was a nanny one against Tottenham, I want to say, as well, was there? Where he sort of nipped in like that?
There's definitely... I feel like Vidic, a glancing header against Chelsea was...
Oh, another corner, yeah.
Yeah, so Yeltsin, and that goal didn't stand. So at least this consistency... You know, but clearly Ten Hag was annoyed. Yeah, the beef that you're sort of describing on social media. I don't know. I just thought the Sancho one. Everyone's telling me that the Sancho one is a stonewall penalty. Watching it live, and I think you disagree with me, don't you? But I thought he exaggerated the dive. He'd overrun the ball, and he kind of felt this is my only chance to make something out of this attacking move. It goes back to what Andy was saying about confidence. He'd kind of done the wrong thing in what he was dribbling at, and then. But listen, if he clips him, I guess it is a penalty. Go on, tell me I'm wrong.
Well, I thought it was a penalty, but Andy?
I didn't think it was a penalty. I thought there was elements of desperation as the game went on.
The Casemiro one, definitely.
United. Yeah, and United were better in the second half. Newcastle got the best defence in the league, along with Manchester City. I thought they were going to lose one of the defenders very early on, and I think this is a point worth making. I think Schnark went off behind the Stretford end, and it showed how small Old Trafford is, because the pitch, and we can see it right now, it falls away quite steeply at the sides, and he could have hurt himself. I think him and Casemiro went flying towards the advertising hoardings. And I think with Ten Hag not being drawn on the referees, I think he's probably been advised to say, if you say anything, that will be tomorrow's back page news. It will be blown up. You know, you won't have said that you disagree with the opinion. It will be Ten Hag slams and, yeah, officials. And I listened to another Premier League manager yesterday just totally be refusing to be drawn as well on criticising the referee. He basically said, I disagree, and kept it like that. So I don't know whether there has been something said internally. You know, don't come out and hammer the referees. I think fans are always going to talk about it. I find... talk about refereeing decisions pretty boring, if I'm honest. I didn't,
especially when you missed a chance like Fred's, yeah, and a chance like Rashford's as well, maybe.
Yeah, I think Fred had four shots and not one of them hit the target. Just looking at his
stats. One had to, didn't it, really? Yeah. Whether Rashford was onside, offside, whether Trippier's toenail played him on or not.
Yeah, it's... We're going to keep going round here because it's just it's 0-0 at home against Newcastle United. Then again, I sense that if this game would have been played a year ago, they probably would have got a late winner. There was that air around, you know, those Villa games, and it was all the slide towards Ole Gunnar losing his job.
It's actually a year today since that first alarming defeat against Leicester, the 4-2 one away. I think the first time that United conceded four against someone, and it continued from there. So it's the time of year. In fact, that game today continued United's record of not winning a home Premier League match in October since 2018.
Wow.
This is the month of discontent here at Old Trafford for some reason.
Did you find that stat?
No, it was on the BBC.
I was going to pull you both up here. How long did you take watching all of Anthony's goals and assists? And what excuse did you...
He was at a party last night in the kitchen on his phone watching Anthony's assists from 2017.
Oh, I've got him here.
He's only 17 at this point. Come here, watch this.
I've just found him doing an assist for the under-8s in Sao Paulo. Just give me 9 hours, love. I'll be coming through. Oh, here he is, aged 11. It's looking good. It's all in the name of research, isn't it, Laurie?
I just thought, I've got to do it right, eh?
How long did it take?
It took a good... Well, it took a... probably about 5 hours on Y Scout, and then you've got to draw the little graphics, haven't you? You know, highlight and listen. Maybe it's, you know, I'm kind of attempting to do things that, you know, people that are much more experienced and knowledgeable about these things are looking at, thinking he's not seeing that correctly at all. But from a kind of, you know, a Luddite view of things, I thought it was kind of.
I'd love to see an image of your graphics. We were in the press box today. Somebody came up to me at half time and said, do you want a cocktail at half time? What would Laurie be having? And I just shook my head, said that, you know, you couldn't afford to buy what he would be ordering.
I was on the Sailor Jerry's and ginger beer last night.
Just making names up of drinks.
No, I used to be on Sailor Jerry's years ago. I know, I've heard the rum. I've heard of Taylor That's why Swift. My nose is bent.
Right, I've heard of Taylor Swift, but what's a Taylor Jerry?
It's rum. Right. Sailor Jerry's.
Oh, Sailor Jerry, I was going to say. Well, rum, look, listen, I'll have rum. My dad never drank beer because he didn't like the taste. When we were 4 years old, we moved from Manchester for 18 months to the Bahamas, right?
Did you?
Honestly, seriously.
My dad lived in the Bahamas?
Honestly. My dad and all the family were footballers. So we went from being a semi-pro player in Manchester and being a semi-pro to being one of the best players on the island in Bahamas.
How's this never come out before?
Where the Bahamians introduced him to dark rum, which he drank until the day that he died. And he used to play against visiting American teams such as New York Cosmos with all their star players. So yeah, I can just about remember it. In 1978, moved there.
Wow.
Yeah. And rum, so that was my dad's drink. So I take back my mistake about the type of rum that you're having. I am a rum connoisseur, and I've been to a rum plantation as well.
I was about to say, if your dad was here, he'd be ashamed of you calling it Taylor Jerry's.
He'd be absolutely disgusted with me. I think the best rum comes from Havana, if any sponsors are listening. What are these sweets called? Are they called Everton Mints?
Yeah.
One of the United stewards, a lad called Webby, gave me this at half-time, and I can't eat it because we're doing a podcast.
Oh, you've just reminded me. In steward-related news, yeah. Do you remember our mate here who'd gone out on that date and he was trying to get us to finish off because she's pregnant?
With that, from that date?
Yeah.
Wow. Webby is an old United fan who used to hitch to games in the 70s. Overnight, he'd go to, like, Northampton away and he'd stand at a roundabout in Altrincham and just give himself all weekend to hitch to a United away game. And he's a real character. He does Rod Stewart impressions, but once, I'm not going to get too sidetracked.
It's quite random.
This is a good one, right? Altrincham, obviously a good team, known as the Manchester United of non-league football, great cup winning, cup runs in the 70s, 80s, and they played Everton here at Old Trafford. I hope I'm not going to lose Webby's job here, but he pretended to be an Altrincham player, and of course, none of the stewards recognised any Altrincham players. Got into the dressing room.
When was this?
78, 79. Right. Went in, took all his clothes off, climbed in the player's bath. And when all the Altrincham players came through, who he was mates with, and as proof, he had a picture of him out of the paper with some of them. He was just like the Bez of the Altrincham team. And as they came off the pitch, having lost to Everton, he was just waiting in the bath with no clothes on. Well, obviously, he's not going to be fully clothed in the bath, is it? He's now one of Manchester United's main stewards, and he handed me this Everton mint, which I'm going to eat when we've stopped doing this podcast.
Life comes at you fast, doesn't it?
It does.
The statute of limitations on that one, I think, has run out, so I think you're fine, Andy. I mean, how many tangents were there in that section? Sorry. I hope you kept up, listeners, because there was actually one point on the penalties I was just going to come back to.
Oh, here we go.
I thought Ronaldo's probably was a pen. Trippier on Ronaldo. I thought he bundled him over. Clumsy, but there we go.
What we really need to do is to have a look at referee Craig Pawson's last 50 penalty decisions, Laurie, and just see whether he's been consistent across the board. I don't know if you're up for it.
Well, also, the times that he's been a VAR, you know, think about those times as well. You know, there's all different manners, so I think you're onto something there.
Okay, well, if you want to read Laurie's piece that's coming up this week on Craig Pawson and his 50 penalty decisions on The Athletic, you can have a look at that, I'm sure, at some point. If you're not a subscriber, you can do so now and pay just £1 a month for the first 6 months by signing up at theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod.
Don't don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Right, I feel like I should apologise at this point because I've come within a kick of Scott McTominay's boot of watching 3-0 draws in 4 days because I was at Leicester Crystal Palace yesterday as well. So I've had a great weekend. Andy, you have seen some goals this weekend though because you were at the women's game earlier on. Did you leave it 3-0?
I did, and I thought it was a good experience. The crowd numbers, I know they dipped a little bit last season. I don't know the official attendance, but 4,000 or 5,000 at Lee. I don't like them playing at Lee, I'll be honest. I think Manchester United should build a small stadium right behind Old Trafford. I think the synergy of playing a women's game or a 21s game, even before a first team.
Well, today
game,
that could have been done in theory.
Could have been brilliant. Yeah. Barcelona used to do it with the B team. They had a B team stadium opposite Camp Nou. And people would go and watch two games of football. It's just, I was stuck in traffic on the way to watch Manchester United women thinking, this is ridiculous. Why is this game even being played there? But Ella Toon got the first two. They played Brighton and Hove Albion. It was a real positive experience. I think they went top of the league.
Yeah, they did.
After, because I couldn't watch the full game because I had to get back to Old Trafford. But if you've not been to watch the women's team, and I don't watch them every week, but good experience, lots of families there. Good little singing section of people singing different songs, and the standards are high. I think the women's team is in a good place at Manchester United.
Yeah, it's Ella Toon's first goal since the European final in the summer for her. I saw a lovely interview with her this week as well, Laurie, where she said she can't walk down a street in Manchester anymore. That's a measure of how it's come on.
Yeah, I love that. And justifiably so as well, I mean, because she's obviously got a great personality. I think that's what appeals to people as much as the football. It's great to see. And I mean, I love that Andy, two matches in one day. You know, this guy obviously loves football.
I watched another one this morning. I watched my little nephews playing.
What score was that?
I'm not going to repeat the score because they absolutely hammered a team, and I was watching it thinking this actually isn't a good idea that this game is being played because it was like 12-0 or something like
that. You just said the score now.
I said it was like 12-0. It was probably
13-0?
Like maybe even more. So it was nice to watch my nephews today and yesterday. The weather's been great in Manchester this weekend, hasn't it? It's lovely to see fields full of young boys and girls playing football in organised teams. So I've watched a lot. I even watched Norwich 1878 against Trafford yesterday as well. I just did, yeah.
So how many days have you been here for now?
Wednesday night I watched Barca Inter. Thursday I watched United Ammonia. Didn't watch a game of football on Friday.
Why? What were you doing?
What did I do on Friday? I saw my family. Saturday, I watch matches. Yeah, I like
you watch football while you're seeing your family.
I love watching football. It's not just a game. I like the way that a football club stands in the community. I want to go to all 92 league grounds. I'm nearly there with it, and I like seeing new stadiums and travelling around, and just, you know, that women's game today, just to see the people and to absorb it. And I also think as a journalist, you should do that. I think you should go to matches because you come across contacts. I don't know if you agree, Laurie. You just meet people. You have chance conversations. You know, Richard Arnold just walked past us here. If we weren't recording that, he would have come up to us and said, look, we're signing Messi in January. But obviously, this podcast takes priority.
Absolutely. Of course it does. Before we move on then, talk about Tottenham, Michael Carrick, we've been meaning to sort of mop this up on a podcast at some point across the last, 2 weeks. He's not Middlesbrough manager. He's not going to be Middlesbrough manager, and he was never going to be Middlesbrough manager. But you've got a bit of an update, Laurie.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there was a moment where it seemed like he might be Middlesbrough manager.
He's not, though, is he?
He's not, no, no. He held talks with them. I think they were really interested in having a conversation with him and seeing if it could work for both them and him. But yeah, he's not. It's not the right time for him to come back into football. He had took 22 years as a professional from academy, playing all those times, and then straight into coaching, and then assistant manager, and then obviously the caretaker manager for 3 games. And I think the glare of all that, and he'd said to his family that after retirement he wanted to have a bit of a break. So he's definitely been having a nice time. I think he's had a holiday in Bali not too long ago. So he's seeing the world, I guess, and enjoying himself in that way. And I think if he's going to come back into football, he wants it to be the right opportunity for him. So yeah, it's an interesting one, though, because he's clearly got a lot to offer the game. He's a very smart guy, you know, did well, didn't he, as caretaker manager for that short period when it was very turbulent, and clearly United would have liked him to stay, wouldn't they, him and Kieran McKenna, rather than have sort of two inexperienced coaches come and assist Ralph Rangnick. So yeah, it'd be interesting. What I don't know, what do you think? Do you think he should come back into management, or is it a case of if you've done your time in football, enjoy your break?
Well, I remember interviewing Carrick when he announced after the Arsenal game here, what was it, last November time, that he was going to be leaving. And one of the key reasons he said at the time was that he wanted to spend more time with his family. So he's obviously had the chance to do that over the last few months. And if I'm allowed to admit this on the podcast, I was speaking to Pablo Zabaleta at a City game recently as well. And he had a very similar take to what it seems like Michael had, which is that when you're playing football, that is your life. You know, he's missed out on so much of his kids growing up. And actually, since he's been retired, he's had the opportunity to be around for them, to pick them up from school, to take them to school, recitals, you know, family parties. He's been there for all of it. So, and these lads are not under financial pressure anymore either. They've done the badges. It's not like they need a payday at any point. They've earned a lot of money during the football career. So I guess you do have to be careful, don't you, about how you sort of decide to progress with your coaching, because you could end up being in exactly the same situation, being away from the family. And as Gary Neville's shown, I suppose, you know, it can last 5 minutes. Paul Scholes the same.
I spoke to Gary about whether he wanted to be a manager. And your point about the financial side of it is an interesting one. When you're at that level, or Michael Carrick's level, you're made for life financially. So this isn't like it used to be, where you needed to carry on working. Top players who won European Cups here became landlords in pubs. It's so distanced from that now. So did they need the grief of leaving the family home to start on a lower managerial rung, where in a job where the average shelf life is 18 months, to be constantly criticised? You've got to really, really want to do it. So you're talking Middlesbrough, they just got rid of Chris Wilder. He became a manager because he needed the money, and he was totally driven. And he was a Sheffield United fan, but he managed in non-league. He really worked his way up and up and up. It's funny, isn't it? They played here this year. They brought 10,500. They knocked Manchester United out of the FA Cup. And really turns, doesn't it, pretty quickly. And that's a good example of it. And as Laurie says, Carrick did very well in that time as caretaker manager here. His statistical record is the best of any Manchester United manager ever. But they do miss out because they're always travelling. There are more games than ever. Players are expected to be in hotels the night before matches. Stuff like that didn't used to be the norm either. They can't do things like go skiing. I know you'll be getting your tiny violins out and saying, rich man can't ski. But, you know, if he wants to...
Do you go skiing, Andy?
I'd like to go once a year, and I could do it better when I was 18 than I can now. Because now, I know I'll go for a couple of days, because now I think, if I fall off that mountain... I've got two kids, but at 18 you
can't totally watch football feels. For at least 2 weeks if that happens.
Yeah, me once took my brother, and he just thought, I don't need to learn any of this. He just went straight to the top and went bang, flying down, you know, smashing into people. But I think the footballers, you know, look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's had offers. I think for them it's about the boredom. It's still doing something. I could name several players who've played for Manchester United who've had offers and just said, no thanks. It's about keeping them active and knowing what the personality is like. In some cases, their partners, their wives have said, get out of the house, you're doing my head in. David Moyes' wife definitely said that to him several times in his career. All right, you've had your 3 weeks, go and get a job and get out the house. Even in COVID, I'm sick of seeing you. Go and do something useful. So he hired a van and started doing deliveries around Preston. And people would say to him, you look like that football manager, David Moyes. Obviously it was. So they make.
Did he actually do that?
He absolutely did that.
Delivering what?
Food parcels for elderly people during COVID. Yeah.
Well, good on him.
Did that. Yeah, he did that. People genuinely did say to him, you look like that Scottish football manager. You know that one who was rubbish at Man United? That's me.
I went on a stag do a few years ago to Benidorm, and the stag's father-in-law was a spitting image of David Moyes. It was not long after he'd had his stint here as United manager, and we were in a bar in Benidorm, and Andy was up doing karaoke, or Moyesy as we all called him, for that weekend. And completely spontaneously, the bar broke into a chorus of David Moyes, football genius. And I got a hand on my shoulder, and it was David's press officer from Everton who said to me, should you be singing that, son? Really? Oh, dear.
That is wild.
Getting what, Brian?
No, it was Darren Griffiths.
Was it?
Yeah.
Interesting, getting clocked there.
That is wild. What are the chances? I thought when Andy said that little lovely detail about Moyes during COVID, that he meant he'd like got a job as an Amazon delivery driver or something, you know, like
I was going with that as well, like Sainsbury's or something. Yeah. Your groceries.
We should have a section as well, the Andy Mitten tangent section. Where
he's on fire today, isn't he?
I love it. This is where you get the golden stuff, because you kind of just let it percolate a bit, and Andy comes out with this story that's just plucked from, you know, the library of his brain that he's got so much of. Really quick one on Carrick again, and this is quite funny. You know, obviously some people really enjoy being around the family. I know that Andy, you know, comes over here and goes to football just to, you know, not see his family. But Carrick was in the away end at Goodison Park with his son JC, which I thought was a nice, you know, so there's that kind of synergy, I suppose, between he's doing the football thing, but also he's having his son along, whereas obviously he couldn't have him, you know, in the dugout with him, could he?
No, and speaking of family, Luke Shaw's just on the pitch with what looks like, is that his son maybe?
Yeah. Oh, that's lovely. And I've seen it when Paul Scholes stopped playing. He could go to the pub with his mates and just do normal things. And I think sometimes the normal things in life are the things that your best things in life are free. You appreciate them, and that's the type of things that they miss. And also the partners, footballers' wives have got an image.
Look at his lad running there. He's got his arms in the air, fantastic. Just running up towards the halfway line.
I know the child of one very successful player here said, I hate Manchester United because they take daddy away from me. And that wasn't said in jest. That was like, I don't see my dad because he's always playing football. And obviously they lived in a beautiful house and they had wonderful holidays, but you know, the demands on them. And even not just the players are obviously really well remunerated, there's a whole support staff who travel with the team, and it's non-stop. Now, we'll go on the pre-season tours and we'll have a drink, we'll have a good time, won't we? And obviously, we're working really hard, if you're listening, wife. But they don't even do that. Long gone are the days, like in the 80s, where they'd go out and have 12 pints, big sessions. You can't do anything now because there's phones everywhere just filming them. Whereas, you know, Laurie and I can go out and have a nice pint.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right, let's talk Tottenham then. Some idiot thought that the game was at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and has just been looking up the fact that they've won all 7 home games so far. But, Laurie, I believe their away form's a bit mixed, thankfully.
That sounds like it was me that was the idiot.
Was it not?
Listen, I'm not naming any names, but there's 3 people in. It wasn't me or Andy that did that. they're in good form, aren't they, Spurs? I mean, they've been more functional, I suppose, than perhaps Tottenham fans might ideally like. I suppose it's an Antonio Conte team, and you know, we think back to, you know, that sliding doors moment. It probably wasn't really a sliding doors because United really didn't entertain Antonio Conte, did they? But people were sort of thinking, could he have, you know, managed Manchester United? I think we're seeing now with Tottenham the kind of football that we would have got. Interesting. Clearly, it works, but I don't know if it's, you know, the most thrilling. He's got options though, hasn't he? He's got a good squad. We spoke about the options that Erik ten Hag didn't have today. Well, you know, Dejan Kulusevski was injured against Everton, but Richarlison starts, Son starts.
Richarlison's injured as well now. I think they said he's going to miss United.
Okay. So, okay, that'll be interesting then. If Kulusevski and Richarlison are both injured, then I suppose that, you know, gives something to be decided upon with who is that third forward. But clearly, you know, Kane and Son have come here before and torn United to shreds, so they can't be overlooked. Although, I don't know if they're still quite clicking. Although, I saw a stat, I think they've assisted one or another 50 times now for Tottenham, which is a pretty amazing relationship they've got. So, they've obviously got to keep an eye on that. They're a hard team to beat. They've got Højbjerg and Bentancur in midfield, you know, solid midfielders. Conte will be a whirling dervish on the sidelines. You know, so I think if United can, if they can sneak a win there, that'd be really big. I think that's what it'll come down to. I can't see, you know, any kind of, you know, blitz from United. I don't think Spurs will go run away with it either, though. I think it could be a similar game to today as we've seen against Newcastle.
In terms of the team, obviously there was a few changes today. I think it was four from the last league game, three from the midweek game against Ammonia, which obviously wasn't necessarily an absolute first choice 11. Going into that match, what do you think he can do? Marcus Rashford comes back, I guess, but I'm not even sure if any of the players who are missing today, like Martial, would necessarily be available. So it's going to have to be more of the same, isn't it? McTominay's back from a ban, I suppose, and I guess Christian Eriksen's illness, we don't know how severe that is, so maybe there will be more options for him.
I think it'll be very similar. Maybe Eriksen for Fred, maybe Rashford for Ronaldo, but pretty much as we saw, I think that Varane had a decent game. I think the defence is looking pretty solid. Would be nice to have another option at right back. I know Tottenham scored six here during COVID, but some of the best nights at Old Trafford in recent years have been beating Tottenham here. Obviously, beat them away.
Ronaldo hat-trick here last year as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I remember one, I think in 2019, a win here. Yeah, and Conte's clearly got them playing for him. It's his way or no way. They're in this fantastic stadium with the best training ground in the country, and they might even be in danger of winning a trophy in the next decade. But if Tottenham win here, and I don't think they will, they'll go 10 points ahead of Manchester United. And when I look at the league table, it just worries me a bit. United would have a game in hand, but there's a bit of a gap. And even though it's still very early, you're going to start seeing, if things go against Manchester United, that fourth spot is the only one that you can reach, because I don't think Manchester United winning the league this year at all. Liverpool had a terrible start to the season, whether they start making it up or not.
What score are they at the moment against City?
I've just blanked City out of my brain, mate, honestly. I've just decided I'm going to be a happier human.
It's still 0-0 just into the second half. I mean, yeah, I think you're right. I think it is a crucial match against Tottenham, because that would begin to feel like an unassailable lead, wouldn't it, really? And then you are beginning then to play for fourth place, and only fourth place. Chelsea look better. They had another win today. Arsenal don't show any signs of slowing down either. So, yeah, I mean, these two matches against Tottenham and Chelsea, it could be a three-way fight between the teams, Laurie, for a place in the Champions League or two places in the Champions League for next season.
Yeah, and I think Chelsea are in a good way, you know, with Graham Potter. He seems to have got in there and kind of got them organised, doesn't he? He's made a few changes. So, you know, that is therefore looking a bit of a closed shop almost if you don't maintain wins. And then you never know what Liverpool are going to do if they sort of spring back into life, you know.
They could.
Yeah, they've done it before. They did it in the season when we thought they were down and out and they could have come here and United could have put them out, and they ended up winning 4-2. I mean, I guess that depended on Mo Salah coming back into full form. So we'll see how that transpires. But they've got a good team, Liverpool, and they know how to win games. So you can't discount them. And therefore, it does make it a tight squeeze into that top four.
I think the crowd's got to be better on Wednesday than it was today. I thought it was a bit flat.
Is it time for an Andy Mitten call again, is it? A rallying call from Mitten.
No, I do follow atmospheres. I think that they're important.
I remember this time last season.
Well, I've not planned it. I thought the Stretford End was all right today, the vocal area. I think if we look over there to the old J stand, which is now
a safe stand-in,
didn't really hear them today. And then I looked at the 3,000 Geordies and I could hear them. Now, to the left of them, K-Stand used to be one of the most vocal areas of this ground. I sat in there for years, row 16, seat 100, block 236. And there wasn't really a lot there. And even in relatively recent years, you'd have a group of fans at the back, they call themselves K-Stand top left, right by the away fans. And didn't like it today when Newcastle fans were singing songs like "It's nice to know you're here, we can see you sneaking out." I just thought it was a bit flat today. And it has been good this season, really good against Liverpool, really good against Arsenal. So we need more from the players, but I think we need more from the fans as well. And we should also say that there were some protests before the game today against the Glazers before the game started, and there were also some chants during the game as well.
Anything to add? You can say no, it's all right. You weren't concentrating, you're on Twitter, weren't you?
I was on Twitter just seeing how my response to the Sancho penalty thing had gone down.
How's it gone down?
Yeah. He's come back at me again, the lad. So, listen, he's put a picture up of Byrne clipping Sancho, which, you know, fine, maybe he did touch him, but I don't know, I wouldn't go off pictures personally, I'd go off full footage or watching it live. The fans, there was Anthony, you know, stand up if you hate Glazers, came out again. And I think that's an important thing to kind of mention. You know, not hatred, we don't want to kind of flag that up too much, but I think the fact that there is a strong feeling, you know, against the ownership still that persists, and when we'll keep on going, I think, throughout the full season.
Okay, we'll leave it there then. Remember, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. But from Andy, Laurie and I at Old Trafford, thank you very much for listening. Thanks for your company, guys, as always. And we'll see you on the next one after Tottenham. Bye-bye. I hope this recording's worked, by the way. We've got a new piece of equipment today, so if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'm relieved, because we know there's been issues in the past. So if you're listening, thanks.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.